Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Stiff Upper Lip Podcast. And it has been quite the few weeks of NFL action since we last hit you guys with an episode. It's also been Christmas and New Year. And to the joy of everybody, it's a full house this week. Huzzah. To my right is the Philadelphia Eagles to my Dallas Cowboys. Sam, how are you?
I'm okay, I guess.
Oh, much like the Eagles.
Oh, why not?
Yes. To below me is the Green Bay Packers to my Detroit Lions. Max, how are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks. That's a little on the nose, considering... You said I'm the Packers, but you said Sam was the Eagles.
I'm just saying that all of you are the wild card teams to me being
the noblest of all birds.
And to the bottom right of the window is the Los Angeles Rams to my San Francisco 49ers. Ed, how are you?
You know, I'm happy to be alive this crisp Monday evening.
Humble brag.
Top draw.
I am alive.
Yeah. Unfortunately, unlike your team, sorry. the playoffs are among us at long last. Week 18 is in the books, and I think the best way that we can really summarize what happened in week 18 is to start. We are hitting with some game recaps just to summarize. And starting really with what happened in Tennessee as the Jacksonville Jaguars, who went 3-7 down the stretch and blew a guaranteed playoff spot almost, and are now out of the playoffs with a 28-20 loss to the Tennessee Titans. And boy howdy, was it a loss. The Jaguars slipped up on many levels throughout the game. Trevor Lawrence really struggled at various points. And, you know, now they are screwed.
I don't think, like... They never looked like the... What did they start? 8-3? They never really looked like that team after, you know, week 11 or 12. I don't know why, but they've just looked so dreadful. Obviously, Lawrence hasn't been there for all of that. And he was probably, like, not 100% today. But just so like far below what I thought his floor would be in a game like this.
I think, yeah, as a sort of primary Jags apologist on the podcast, I sort of have to wring my hands and say that really couldn't have gone any worse. That was a piss poor performance in a very important spot. Not just from Trev, but like, I mean, Evan Engram didn't turn up, even he got the yards, but not the first downs. You know, it was one of those games where looking for a spark from anyone and no one came up with anything.
Yeah, I mean, they did have some health issues in the second half. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence missed a game. He's come back and maybe he's come back a little bit too soon. He was dinged up, but like, even with that caveat, you have to admit that was pretty catastrophically disappointing from the Jags, who I don't really think... I can't really think of anything this year that made them really special. And I think that they're a team where people, you know, they want to really like the Jags. I mean, really speaking from the position of of being UK-based, obviously, and I think people over here in particular want them to do well, and I think they're kind of willing them to do well. So when they do things like, remember, they traded for Calvin Ridley, and then he went off in week one, and people were like, the Jags have stolen Calvin Ridley away from the Falcons, because he was suspended for a year, but that's worked out really well. And it was kind of obvious that they were forcing the ball to him at the time, and although he was definitely a good receiver, he never really was that number one kind of difference-making guy. They really missed, if anything, they really missed Christian Kirk more in Week 18. And yeah, they've got a long summer ahead, but I think they'll be hopeful just from the sheer fact of they'll be a bit healthier.
Not a long hot summer, as we all dream of.
No, cold summer, I guess, but I think for the Titans it was a nice way to go out, and it was the last time we'll see Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, who defined the last 5 years for them. And maybe Mike Vrabel doesn't seem very happy at all in Tennessee, so they won on the day, but they'll be even more uncertain down the road. Sorry, I mean, if there's a Titans fan who heard that, I'm sorry.
Vrabel to the Patriots just seems like penciled in at this point, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely felt like a sort of changing of the guard in Tennessee for quite a few things. Derrick Henry also stayed out on the field afterwards and started thanking his like avocado salesman in the area and what have you. So like, it really does feel like a sort of real transitional point is about to come for Tennessee, but yeah, Jacksonville blew it. And what happens when Jacksonville blows it? Well, it opens the door for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who cannot die. They will never, ever die, as much as they look dead at any point in their time, because they beat the Baltimore Ravens on Saturday night. And that meant that just a single Jags or Bills loss would be enough for at least the seventh seed. And due to the Titans winning, that means that they got through. Najee Harris is pretty fucking good, isn't he? That's pretty cool. I'm glad that he's good. That's a development. Turns out you can draft a running back in the first round, and they might just so happen to not miss 3.5 years worth of game time and regress horrendously.
Well, it was the conditions in this game were absolutely awful. This was definitely the hello HR of wildcard securing games. Like, it was just a bit of a miserable watch for all involved. And I think that the Steelers as a team do deserve to be in the playoffs. So I'll give you that much, Chappers, but it didn't thrill me. But the conditions were made for Najee Harris in this game, and he was pretty much the only person. Did he have any fumbles in this game?
No, he didn't, which was also kind of impressive considering that he had 31 touches and 133 yards, and not a single one of them came out of his hands. Considering that literally every other player that touched the ball couldn't hang on to it to save their life. I mean, I love me some Jalen Warren.
How many fumbles were there?
But there was 8 fumbles in the game, and he had 6 of them on his own. Because the ball, it was genuinely terrible to actually watch the game, because the rain was so bad. But it was quite something. One thing that happened basically since we stopped recording for the Christmas break is we all got very ill, and Mason Rudolph became good.
Coincidence?
I don't even understand how that happened. Our first season doing this show was me going through the ringer of believing in and then hating every second of the Mason Rudolph experience. And now it's come full circle in our fifth year, so fair play. But the Steelers,
they're calling it the most aesthetically pleasing AFC North game on record.
Yeah. The Steelers weren't the only ones, though, that benefited from Jacksonville messing up, and that was because the Buffalo Bills, who, coming into the game, had already got their playoff spot secured due to the Jacksonville misstep. But they had to still try for second place in the AFC East, and they did that by coming from 14-0 down with 21 unanswered points against the Miami Dolphins, and that got them the 2 seed and put the Dolphins in at the 6. Buffalo seemed to be coming in pretty feisty in the AFC playoff window. Yeah. I think so.
You say that.
Two offensive scores.
Like, the last month of the season, like 85% of the time when they had to have it, Josh Allen fucking sucked. He was so bad for... Like, they had those two games where he just had very minimal game impact. But last night when he was bad, I mean, he had a few horrific interceptions that he got bailed. Fucking Deontay Hardy bailed him out with that punt return, to be honest. Oh, yeah. If that had been tied and Josh Allen's thrown those two picks into the end zone, you think, like, good lord. But he did get bailed out by the rest of the team. And also the fact that the Dolphins, let's just say they are who we thought they were.
Like, if this game was against probably any of the other, like, AFC playoff teams, like, I think Buffalo would have bottled it.
I do think you're right, to be honest. They left the door wide open.
But yeah, and Miami just can't do anything against, like, any team that puts up a vague amount of resistance, even this Bills team.
I mean, they've had terrible injury luck as well, to be fair to them. I mean, they lost almost all their pass rush. Obviously, Jalen Waddle and Raheem Mostert were out, but it's just like, in the summer, when the other teams are getting heat stroke in their stadium, it's easy to look good and to, you know, make other teams look like they're on the brink of passing out, which they probably are. But we're in this cycle now where in September, all of the Dolphins fans and to be fair, quite a few people in the media are like, well, where are the Tua haters now, eh? We heard this guy can't play, but he looks pretty good out there. And then December and January, every year without fail, he genuinely looks bad. Like, he looks like a below average starting quarterback. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It is a they are who we thought they were encapsulation.
Yeah, that last tier interception was damning.
It's startling. I mean, obviously they didn't need to win, but the division was on the line. You know, like...
Yeah. It reflects very poorly on both teams that this was, like, for the division. And this was the performance we got from
it. Well, despite what I said earlier about Josh Allen, when he was playing well last night, it looked really good, and the Bills looked like the Bills. The turnovers have been part of his game, so you can't really just discount the fact that, like, oh, if he hadn't thrown those three horrendous interceptions that almost cost his team the playoffs, he would have been quite good, because they did happen. But if in a future game he didn't do that, you would fancy the Bills to hang... Well, I mean, they're playing the Steelers, so there's a chance that they could hang 30, but there's a chance as well that he could just do the same thing and let anyone into the game. Not to say that the Steelers are just anyone. Well, am I saying that?
You could be, to be fair.
They're not the best team in the playoffs, maybe, but they're certainly good enough to have won the kind of game that the Bills played today.
The Bills are such an odd team, really, because, I mean, like you say, over the sort of last month, it's sort of been... if they'd maybe not have run into the Chargers and Patriots and like this Dolphins team, maybe they wouldn't have come out of it with 3 wins on the bounce. But like, when Josh Allen turns it on, it is genuinely impressive to just watch the guy like play football. But he has he's very streaky, but inside of games. So like, when they played the Eagles, for example, and like, in that absolutely mental game, like, Josh Allen was genuinely unbelievable for about 5/6 of the game, but that one other small section of the game, or like, basically wasn't anywhere near enough to get them over the line when they needed it. And it's sort of, you don't really know entirely what you're going to get out of Buffalo, especially if the weather conditions, which it sounds like for this wild card game, are going to be blizzardy, high winds, etc. Yeah, they kind of need the running game to be good to supplement Josh Allen not having to throw it 40 times and just hope and pray, because it seems to work until maybe it doesn't work, and then it's a problem. Then it's a big problem, and Buffalo can't win games when that becomes the issue.
Yeah, Miami didn't take care of business, and now they had to go and play in Arrowhead against Steve Spagnuolo's defense, and the starting game time temperature for that game is expected to be between minus 19 and minus 23 degrees Celsius with wind chill.
Yeah, but Miami losing this game basically cost them about 70 degrees worth of Fahrenheit. It's quite impressive.
I mean, it feels like a dead end for them. I mean, well, the games aren't played on paper, man. We'll see what happens. they didn't take care of business at all.
Now, and then looking across to the other side of the NFL, going to the NFC, there wasn't too much up for grabs in this half, but there was at least one division left to be won, and that was by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They won 9-0 against the Panthers. It was a bad game. It did, however, eliminate the Saints and the Falcons both in the same swing, although the Falcons tried eliminating themselves on many occasions, and boy howdy did they get pounced by the Saints, and it meant nothing. So good job, NFC South. What an absolute disaster of a year it's been in that division. But there was one other bit, which was that with the Buccaneers' win and the Seahawks' sort of dwindling play over the course of the last month, it meant that the Packers were winning in, and they did just that with a 17-9 victory over the Bears. Max, you've not had the opportunity to properly wax lyrical about Jordan Love for most of the year, to be fair, because we've not been doing these recaps and we've sort of been trying to avoid blowing smoke up of everyone else's asses on this show. So Max, I'm going to open up the floor and just let you just talk about some of these throws, because I think you deserve it.
I mean, thank you for saying that. I think it's night and day difference now between, you know, when they're coming off that three pick game against the Raiders that was horrendous, and it just looked like every single play was an uphill battle. But now it is honestly like every single play they expect to find someone and probably find them for a big gain as well. They've got a lot of receivers who are capable of picking up those sort of intermediate and deep route passes. So I think they're going to grow into it. They're a dangerous team to face in the playoff, but I think the defense is what's going to keep them back. I mean, the last points that the Panthers scored this year were against the Packers, and that was in week 15, and they scored 30 of them. So, I mean, it's all right. They slowed down the Bears, who, you know, if you look at the Bears just couldn't run the ball. I mean, Fields' stat line is all right, but they just didn't throw it that much. It was kind of a weird game plan by them. Albeit it was in a close game, so maybe they were trying to limit possessions. The Bears were very mediocre. And I think the Packers were quite impressive because the Bears' defense has improved since that Montez Sweat trade, which we really bashed, but it is not looking that bad now. So they're not slouches. I mean, a lot of their good games came against some of the worst offenses in the league. But the Packers scored 17 points, but they didn't punt a single time all game. It was drop touchdown, which led to a missed field goal, touchdown, and then they had that botched end of half. And then I think they went like touchdown, fumble, field goal, end of game. Almost all of their drives went at least 50 yards. So only scored 17 points, but they looked comfortable all day. And it was all right. It was nice to get in the playoffs after last year they bottled it in brutal fashion with Kirby Joseph reducing the franchise to dust over the summer. But you come out of it clean. That's the luxury of being a Packers fan.
Yeah, that is true. I was actually quite surprised. I think I was sort of talking to you in our like little private chat just to be like, you know, other than the Bears have massively improved since that week one game, and Joe Barry is bad and the Bears are on the upswing. And then the Bears went back to their week one game script and Luke Getsy decided, ah, that didn't work. Let's do it again. Let's see how that goes. And
yeah,
it didn't work.
Because they had a lot of decent receptions, but I think that you kind of did see the old Fields holding onto the ball thing. I mean, he took 5 sacks and at least 3 of them were drive enders on third down. So, yeah. And I mean, I felt a bit sorry for him, really, because he got fucking smacked. It was a dirty hit by Jonathan Owens. Got taken out of the game 3 games later. It was a mess. They took him out to get him checked for a concussion because everyone watching it knew that he'd been shaken up, his head smashed on the turf. He was out with like one play for the Peter Man, and then he came back in. It's like, okay, this game's kind of not being managed very well. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. What do you like? I think to Fields' credit, he has been a better quarterback, a much better quarterback, really, the last 6 weeks. And even before he got hurt, he was playing really well. But he kind of still feels like he has this ceiling. So when you have a defined ceiling like that, the Bears are tasked with a very tough decision. It's really the argument of, do you want a higher ceiling at the cost of, you know, resetting the franchise to some extent, or persevere and hope that you're not missing out on like a CJ Stroud for the second year era?
I think Justin Fields, there was a statement that he made where he all but said goodbye to the city of Chicago. And you have to look at it and say, like, Poles didn't draft this guy. Eberflus didn't have a hand in drafting this guy. It seems pretty clear to me that they're going to move on.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough spot coming in. But, you know, maybe it's one of those where, you know, sometimes when you put the right, like, look at the Steelers, for example, when you put the right, I'm not saying Mason Rudolph is the right quarterback for the future of the Steelers, but when you put a quarterback who knows the offense or works well in the offense, all of a sudden it's like, wow, this offensive line is actually way better than I thought, and the running backs are way better than I thought. It is really like the key to unlock the gate to success.
I almost wonder regarding with Justin Fields, you say that there's sort of like the overall ceiling that I think it's been shown that it's still, no matter how well he can play, it still doesn't ever feel like when they play a team that has a really well designed defense that isn't
like the Packers,
yeah, or like that other team that we don't want to mention, or I mean even the Vikings, who are like a well coached unit, they just were a bit talent poor for most of the year on that side of the ball. It's like he doesn't quite still give the Bears the best chance to win unless the team that he's playing happens to be so bad that there is like the way that Fields can carve up teams. Because it's not like he's lacking in the physical aspects. And to be fair, his confidence of actually being able to trust his receivers and feel like he can cork the ball down the field has improved a lot. It just never seems to quite tick over.
Yeah. The Bears, to be fair, really have 2 playmakers. One is DJ Moore and one is Cole Kmet, who didn't play. I do think, who was the tackle that they drafted last year?
Velus Jones, was it?
No, the tackle.
Paris Johnson's on the Cardinals.
Oh,
shit.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, I'm going to look it up.
He wears number 58, right?
The one... No, he was...
Darnell Wright?
It's not Darnell Wright.
Darnell Wright.
He's had a fairly promising campaign. I think if you put Fields with, this would be fascinating to talk a little bit more about in the summer if we wanted to do a podcast then, but if you put Fields with like a Marvin Harrison Jr., which you could, you could trade down from one, get a couple more first round picks, you get Marvin, like a Marvin Harrison or like a Romo Dunze type, and then put in some good interior linemen, and you can kind of see the vision, but they're kind of stuck in purgatory, and it kind of feels with the Bears like, do you really have any faith that whichever one they do, for factors probably outside of their control, is going to work out for them? It's just been 100 years of the same old Bears. At least on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I was about to say, because like on the defensive side, I mean, Tyrique Stevenson really came on in leaps and bounds, it felt like, over the course of the season. And he had a couple of big plays again in this one. He was the one that forced out the fumble on Jordan Love. Really ugly fumble for Love to cough up, by the way.
He was looking downfield and Tyrique Stevenson's caught up with him, got his helmet on the ball and just knocked it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Love was in that where he's like coming to the sideline and he's taking it for granted that if he were to get hit, it would go out of bounds. And
yeah.
Could have been costly, but other than that, I mean, he was like, he had like 5 incompletions, 2 of them were dropped touchdowns, and yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying that Love played a bad game. I was just like, Tyrique Stevenson's doing well. He made the play on the like only real downside of the game from Jordan Love. Anyway, we've got a long off season to talk about the Bears again forever.
Jalen Johnson's a free agent, man. It's pressing stuff.
Yeah, we've got a lot of off season to be able to talk about all of these things, but why don't we turn our attention to some of these playoff teams and let's see whether or not they
playoffs.
Yeah, actually,
playoffs. Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs. I just hope we can win a game.
Such a good quote, Jim Mora, wherever you are right now. He might be dead. I hope that you
haven't. No, I think he lives permanently in a pool in Southern California.
Respect. Like the Australian Prime Minister.
Or he's dead.
or he's dead. He might have been that guy that was sent up in a balloon on a like deck chair, sent up with like 5 balloons.
Yeah. Larry Walters.
That's the one.
Maybe I remember that and not people's birthdays and shit.
Lawn chair Larry.
Oh, so good. Anyway, how many teams have made the playoffs? I forget.
14
teams made the playoffs.
How many teams?
Give or take.
I'm not very good at the old internal maths, mental maths. 14 teams have made the playoffs. We are... What was that?
That was Emma's Alexa telling her to drink water.
I wondered what that was. I thought we were getting spoken to from beyond the grave by Jim Mora.
Stop it.
What's 14... heaven like, Jim? Heaven? I just hope we can get out of purgatory. I'm thinking of getting out of purgatory.
Oh my god, 14 teams have made the playoffs.
Divine stuff.
There are definitely some things that they would like to shake off coming into this postseason. There's quite a few teams actually that could have something going for them, but we're going to go around the horn and pick one team each and figure out what that monkey off the back, devil on the shoulder scenario might be. Max, do you want to hit this one first for a team, please?
I will. And the shouldered simian in question is the Baltimore Ravens and the ghost of the 2019, wasn't it, when Lamar first won MVP? The 2019 playoffs, when they... In a very similar situation, sometimes I think about Lamar Jackson was so much fun to watch that year. I mean, he's never quite been the same on the ground since, but he was special that year. Remember that run he had against the Bengals and Kevin Harlan was like, he is Houdini.
Yeah. Nick juked his ankles. Yeah. Yeah.
Nick Vigil's career ended on that day. For all intents and purposes.
They're holding a candle lit Vigil for him as we speak.
They found themselves in a very similar situation. They had won the conference going into, well, I guess it would have been week 17 at the time. And they decided to rest their starters, which they did also against the Steelers this year. And they came out in the first game and played the Titans, who basically just, it was a really ugly game. They had no juice. That was the game, if you recall, when the Titans and the Ravens had that funny beef where they were just like stamping on each other's logos at the halfway line, dancing on each other's logos.
That was so good. They're still so salty about it, both of them. It's so great.
It is, honestly. It was a great bit of beef. Who was it on the Titans? It wasn't... it doesn't really matter. It was like a defensive back. They were instigating beef. And I think that kind of has... I mean, the story of Lamar Jackson's career so far really has been an inability after, you know, the start of December, you know, mid-December, to really put it to bed. They've been one of the... When he's, you know, he's been injured a bit, but when he's been in there, you know, they've been one of the winningest teams in the regular season, but they've never really threatened the Super Bowl. I think this year they've been getting hot at the right time. Obviously, dismantled the 49ers comprehensively. They put, what was it, 56 on the Dolphins 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was.
And it is the time-old quandary of when you've got a team winning on that kind of form and you're going to have a bye as well. Do you really want to disrupt that rhythm for 2 weeks, risk losing the juice and having a repeat of 2019? Because that would be, after the season they've had, that would be just crushing, you know, which would be funny for some, I'm sure. And, well, mostly for Ravens fans, it would be disappointing. But, I mean, I don't know what you guys think, whether they made the right decision. Like, you can't really risk it, can you? But, like, it's like the, remember the Mike, to go on a brief tangent, remember the Michael Crabtree Aqib Talib chain pulling beef from like 6 years ago, where Aqib Talib, when he was on the Broncos, every time he played Crabtree on the radiators, I said, he would just reach and rip the golden chain up, and then Crabtree at one point started taping it to his chest. Like right over his chest, and as soon as it gets into your head like that, you've already lost. And I think he still lost the chain afterwards, and it caused a massive fight, like the first play of that game. But do you consider it getting into your head, or do you consider it maybe learning from your lessons?
I think it's tricky when it comes to whether or not like the Ravens should have, because I assume that this is what you mean. Like, should the Ravens have rested their starters while on a hot streak at this point? It's tricky because the Ravens are one of the most injury-bitten teams that I can really recall over the course of the last, like, 4 years. It feels like they lose every single member of their secondary and their quarterback and two wide receivers and an offensive lineman every single year. And this
seven
is the...
or eight running backs.
Yeah, and seven or eight running backs. And this is the first year where not really much of that has happened, and they're coming into it fairly well, like, fairly healthy. I know that they lost Keaton Mitchell against the Dolphins, but they've still got Gus Edwards, they've still got, they've still believe in Justice Hill. Like, there's still talent there at the running back position, and they're coming into it with healthy aspects across the board, especially on offense, which they tend not to do because they're all usually hurt by this point. So I fully understand why they'd rest starters in week 18, especially divisional game against Pittsburgh. Like, that game always ends up full-blooded, and with the conditions, I mean, you you see that, like, TJ Watt leaves the game, sure, on, like, a freak accident, but, like, there's no guarantee that the Ravens wouldn't have had something happen to them. I'm all right with them resting the starters, but it is tricky because that 2 weeks of just sort of sitting around, and obviously they'll be practicing and working out and what have you, but 2 weeks of no football, you've seen it happen to teams where they'll get derailed by resting starters and then coming off of that bye and then getting their asses handed to them, maybe even by a 7th seed, just saying. So,
am I wrong in thinking, remember that Chiefs-Titans game where Mariota caught his own pass? Were the Chiefs on bye that year? And everyone was like, it was Alex Smith, and I think it was like the first year where they were actually decent on offense. I think they'd come off a bye, and it was the Titans are like that team you don't want to see when you're coming off the bye in the playoffs, because they're like such a curmudgeonly team, so they'll be grateful that they won't have to go there and get their logo stamped on.
Surely, yeah. I know it, like, because of Ghosts of 2019, it's this, like, it's a talking point now, but I think it's absolutely like getting in your head too much to like not rest starters when you've got the one seed locked up. Like, if you really like believe in like the like individual, like, you know, the stars on your team, of which like Baltimore has a lot, and you believe in the scheme, like, trust that you're gonna go in with fucking healthy guys and they'll actually like produce.
Is Mark Andrews
not? I was gonna say that, like, I feel like it's not been mentioned at all.
Yeah, Mark Andrews, I think, was done for the year. Like,
oh, it's like unless they make the Super Bowl, maybe, or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Maybe it was one of those, yeah, like they'd have to make the Super Bowl, but yeah. I think that it'd still have been like he'd be questionable, maybe even doubtful, even if they got there.
I mean, the Ravens of 2019 didn't have Zay Flowers. I mean, at the time, people were saying, oh, they had Hollywood Brown. Not Zay Flowers is a better receiver, and they didn't have, like, the Isaiah Likely type backup at the time.
Make that clear.
You know. Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it was the right decision.
I'm totally with whomever thinks sitting starters ahead of key matches is the best. Like, momentum is something, but protecting them from injuries is vastly more important for me.
Yeah. So
until they come out flat and lose, then we'll rethink.
Well, yeah, I think it also depends on who gets through in the wild card, because they would be facing either Miami, one of Houston, or that other one, or Pittsburgh. Now, I think that they would much prefer to be facing either Houston or Miami, because going against the division rival off of a 2 week rest feels like a very cursed position for Baltimore in this playoffs perspective. Especially considering that both of them have very healthy records against Baltimore over the last like 3-4 years. Pittsburgh is 7-1 against Baltimore over the last 8 games, which doesn't sound right, but they are like a bogey team. And I think that Baltimore do struggle against that other one as well. I'm not sure of the exact specifics of the record, but they don't want to be running into either of those, especially off of sitting for 2 weeks. They want to be facing Houston or Miami. So they'll have to wait and see how it turns out, but they could do with one of Buffalo or Kansas City winning to, one of either Buffalo or Miami winning to avoid that happening. Maybe both, actually. But, yeah. Anyway, shall we move on? I was trying to find specifically when Mark Andrews would be eyeing it up, and they're just saying they're eyeing him up for a deep playoff run. So that doesn't really tell me anything specifically. So we'll talk about it if it happens, but put a pin in that. Ed, do you want to cover your team's monkey on their back?
Yeah, mine's kind of a simple one. Because I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the least mentioned team on our podcast this year. The monkey on their back is simple. except for the team that we don't talk about. Win a game convincingly. Like 9-0 in your final game. Just beat a team well. That is all we need to see of you to consider you worthy of a playoff spot, because you came from the NFC South, which was an absolute Terror Dome shit show.
They beat the brakes off of another playoff team, to be fair.
When was that?
It was a one-score game, wasn't it?
What, the Packers won? No, it was 34-20.
Yeah, whatever. I mean,
Baker Mayfield had a perfect passer rating. That to me says beat the brakes off.
They scored 4 more points against the Packers than the Panthers did. Makes you think, huh?
Yeah. They scored 9 more points against the Panthers than the Panthers did against them. So,
that's really why they're here. After,
yeah, they, I mean, have,
they had,
yeah.
They had two chances to clinch and put the game away. The first one, they put a pretty miserable performance against the Saints. And then, yeah, another pretty miserable performance over the Panthers.
When they had was the preseason one against the Ravens.
I have some breaking news.
Thank you. This is my point.
Some breaking news.
He's been fired.
Don Wink Martindale has resigned as Giants defensive coordinator. He has parted ways with the team. He wants a head coaching job, I believe.
Oh, he does?
Apparently so.
That's wild, though.
I want a date with Jodie Foster.
So yeah, Black Monday claims another victim, and it's Don Wink Martindale scalping himself.
I'm going to lose my job.
His last wink. Anyway, on the topic of the Bucks. Yeah, it really feels like they peaked like 3 weeks too soon. Remember Rashad White had that really good run in the middle of the season? I think he's been quite quiet of late. It was almost like the entire purpose of the Bucks as a franchise is to get Mike Evans to 1,000 yards, and then after that it's mission accomplished.
It's a shadow organization.
I mean, Rashad White's touched the ball more times than any non-QB all year. And yeah, the past few games have had such little to show for it, it's laughable. So yeah, to the Buccaneers.
I'll be right.
While we're on the subject, coaching. Max, a while ago you said that on Bucks Twitter, they were angry that What's-His-Face will still be the head coach next year.
Todd
Bowles.
Think
that Ted Bowles, that's it, Todd Bowles.
Ted Bowles.
Hello, my name's Ted Bowles.
Ted Bowles is like when you go down the pub and you ask what the guy on the end of the bar does on the Saturdays in the village.
Oh yeah, Ted Bowles he does.
Yeah. But you know, like Bowles with an E. Like on the bowling green.
Do you think
not on the alley?
If they absolutely shit the bed in the playoffs, do you think they'll keep his job?
I do. I think I'm not really an expert on the situation, to be fair, but my instinct would be that they would potentially be more willing to get a new quarterback than a new coach, potentially. They had talk about extending Baker Mayfield after that Packers game, but They had talk about putting Tommy DeVito in the fucking Italian American Sports Hall of Fame after playing the Packers. So, what does that really tell you? And he's a defensive coach, and the defense doesn't have that many stars. I mean, Antoine Winfield was a bit of a Pro Bowl snub, many people are saying. Had another great season, but other than that, on the defense,
Nobody is saying about Winfield being a snub more than Winfield's dad, by the way. He's having a real like OBJ's dad moment. Like,
OBJ's dad, yeah. I think, you know, they had like the weird stuff with Devin White in the middle of the season. The roster isn't where it needs to be. Maybe they get him canned, but I don't think he's the number one problem that they have.
Fair enough, yeah. I would go along with that.
Anyway, we've been talking about the Bucks for way too long by this podcast, then.
We have, yeah.
Hard agree.
We've not given them any pop, basically, all year, and that should continue going forward. Sam, who's your who's your take?
My monkey back scenario centers around the playoff and Buffalo Bills. It's always been a rocky road. Every season is. But I think that there's one thing in particular that like they really need to like get over. Early on the morning of Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, 19 hijackers took control of four commercial airliners, two Boeing 777s, two Boeing 767s en route to California after takeoff.
We're not reading the Wikipedia article for 9/11 for 40 minutes.
No. The ape that must be shaken is in fact the fact that the good, exciting, you know, electric quarterback Josh Allen needs to throw from his back the wretched, idiotic, just absolutely atrocious Josh Allen that has plagued him. So throw him straight off his back and take a thundering Bills team on a deep playoff run.
If I'd known that's what you were going to pick, we probably wouldn't have spent the entire like first part of this podcast talking about it.
Yeah, it lessened it slightly. But I was too busy reading the Wikipedia page for the September 11th attack to really think about Sean the effect McDermott that would moment. Have.
Well, if anyone wants to know our takes on this, just go back to that part of the podcast. Re-listen to it and think. And while you're doing that, we'll sit here and we'll try and think of whether there were any teams that we mentioned less than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on this podcast.
That's a good point.
I really think the Titans are probably there or thereabouts.
Well, the Titans got two big segment usages. They got the phone and the poem.
Ron
Carthen and Ron Carthen as well. So
I don't feel like we talked about the Raiders that much.
No, I think we did.
That was the Antonio Pierce thing, and
maybe the Chargers. I don't think we've talked about for like 6 weeks. Not since the Giff Smith era began, that much is for sure.
Yeah, but we tend to talk about the Chargers quite a lot. You know who I actually think we didn't talk about very much? I think we didn't talk about the Colts really at all year.
Yeah.
Anthony Richardson, which we talked about on the rookie recap once at the beginning of the year. We genuinely just didn't talk about them. And for good reason, they are dead now.
Damn. Anyway, thanks for listening back to our discussion. I don't think that's how recordings of audio work, but while you were doing that, we were talking about Ran and Ron, the Carthon fan twins. 9/11, man. Do your own research.
Oh, my God.
9/11. That's all it says on the Wikipedia article.
quote from Aaron Rodgers. Do your own research.
Wait. What's the name of the Wikipedia guy?
Are you thinking of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange?
No, no, no. I said it was Jimmy Glass, but that's the guy who scored the goal. Yeah,
for Carlisle. Fucking Carlisle against, like, Scarborough. This is very silly. Buffalo have a demon to exercise, and you can go and listen to the beginning of the show. I guess in that case, Jimmy Wales.
That's the
nice, nice.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, one final team then that that need to exercise a demon and get rid of them is
America's team.
It's the Dallas Cowboys, who haven't been to the NFC Championship since 1995, and that is a huge demon to exercise because they are probably as well set up to make that deep playoff run as they've been maybe for a couple decades now. But they've got this habit recently. They've really gotten into this habit of messing up in the stupidest and funniest way that they possibly can with the very last play of the game, usually against the 49ers. They might not run into the 49ers until the NFC Championship. So they would at least be at the very minimal aspect of where they need to be to have exercised this demon. Can they get out of their own way quickly enough and for long enough to reach the promised land of being nearly at a Super Bowl? Not even making it to the big game, just being close enough that they can just get this horrible mucusy splodge off of their chest.
Jesus Christ. This is worse than the 9/11 bit.
This is honestly worse than 9/11. You heard it here first.
This is our 9/11.
Remember the Deron Bland Rookie of the Defensive Player of the Year talk? Where is he now in the odds? Because I don't feel like I've had anyone talk about him since he got that record breaking victory.
So he got absolutely cooked by the Seattle Seahawks, and I think he genuinely fell about 4,000 places on the Defensive Player of the Year like odds, or like 4,000 prices, I guess. He was way off the ball. But then he got a pick in this last game, and so he probably climbed back up to 3,900. So good job. He is nowhere near. Yeah, he's. I think it hasn't been helped that, like, the people that I think were probably ahead of him or, like, close to him have all reemerged or continued to dominate in their own right. Because now Deron Bland's, like, getting annihilated by the Seahawks like, weighs heavily.
Isn't he sub Trayvon Diggs? Didn't they just kind of get another guy, like a ballhook guy that's absolutely terrible in coverage?
Well, the thing is, he was actually really good in coverage, and then he got absolutely annihilated. So, like, Diggs was getting targeted a lot because he was getting toasted for 1,400 yards over the year, but Deron Bland actually genuinely kept the ball from hitting people's hands, at least. Plus, as well, breaking the NFL record for pick sixes in a single season. It's slightly better than just making the picks. But
what's funny is, if he'd broken the record in, like, week 18, he probably would be the front runner, but he went too soon.
Yeah.
And there was enough time for everyone to forget about it. And he really did get toasted, didn't he? It's been a very uncertain year in the NFL. A lot of things that we thought we knew to be true have betrayed us. So, in a way, it would be quite reassuring if, as ever in the NFC, the Packers beat the Cowboys and then get torn to shreds by the 49ers. That would just be like reassuring normality.
I think it probably, yeah, it's tricky. It feels like the more things change, the more they stay the same. But I do
get a Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl.
I don't want that. I really don't want that. I'm actually sick of, well, I think it's not a very hot take to say that I'm sick of the Chiefs being in the Super Bowl. Actually, guys, I'm a little bit tired, you know, of the Kansas City Chiefs being in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. The first month or 2 months, I really loved it, but now I'm getting a little bit tired of them about Taylor Swift all the time as well.
Oh, yeah. But at least it seems like everyone's sort of, like, forgotten about it a little bit. Like, there's obviously still those, like, batshit insanos that have been constantly going on about it, but like the average NFL going fan sort of moved on around the time that Chargers lady showed up, I think.
Oh god, yeah.
we didn't really cover that, but she was actually, I think, the exact moment that everybody sort of stopped caring about Taylor Swift.
Yeah, the funny thing is that's actually Giff Smith's mum. Prove me wrong.
Prove me wrong, children.
Look it up on Wikipedia. I've contacted Jimmy Glass about it.
Oh my god.
Would you guys like to hear the weirdest piece of breaking news of the year?
The September 11th attacks, commonly known as 9/11.
No, I realize I've massively overhyped that, but I just saw an article that says that Garrett Wilson labeled 2023 the worst year of his life.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Which I thought was true.
the worst year of his entire life. What?
That was just him at the exit interviews. How you doing, Garrett? That was the worst year of my entire life.
I'm not like a plain guy.
Tim Boyle effect. You know what they say, man? A watched Tim never boils.
Why don't we just get out of here?
Play the music, man.
Yeah, I'm queuing it up. I'm hitting it. You pipe down, I will produce when I feel like it. Yeah? Yeah?
Dun, dun, dun.
I run this show. It's about me!
Any final thoughts, Chappers?
The Lions are going to lose to Matt Stafford because it'll be really funny when that happens.
I'll take this and I'll raise it. The Lions will lose to the Eagles' DC Matt Patricia.
Over under the number of times that we read a headline about Kelly Stafford this week, 3.5.
The Steelers are going to upset the Bills. I'm putting my marker out there in the world. They're going to do it.
Who's going to Super Bowl?
The inevitable bullshit will finally reign true in the playoffs.
And one last word, rest in peace, Wink.